You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Back here on ESPN 97.5, Jeremy Branham has left me. He's gone for the day as he gets ready for some Cougs basketball, I believe is what he said he's got going on tonight. We're going to pivot ourselves a little bit. We are joined right now by Taylor Dahl of Helmets and Heels on 1010XL in Jacksonville. Before we bring in Taylor, quick note here, as we look ahead to the Texans' schedule, there is a TBD for December 27th for the Texans and Chargers game. That game could have been on that Saturday or Sunday. The Texans will play the Chargers at 3:25 on the 27th, week 17. They will be game one on the NFL Network. Game two will be the Baltimore Ravens versus the Green Bay Packers. But Taylor, I want to just have you on here because now with, I don't know, Philip Rivers playing quarterback with the Indianapolis Colts, it feels like it's officially a two-team race for the AFC South. We know these games are completed, so I'm just curious now from a Jacksonville perspective, you know, what the view is on the Houston Texans and this divisional race.
Hi, Joe. Thanks for having me on.
Of course.
I think that Houston early on, it's funny because going back to probably week 6-7, I want to say, on our show, we went through teams saying if we were burying the team, if they had, you know, a contender, bury them. And then we had kind of these mid teams that were lingering in there. And two of the three on our show, including myself, buried the Texans a while ago. And I think that a large part of that was it just felt like the offense, who I was very high on preseason, I love Nico Collins. He's one of my favorite wide receivers in the NFL, and I've been very vocal about that. Jacksonville fans don't love hearing it. I just think he does a lot of things very well. And they also drafted two of the wide receivers that I wanted pre-draft. And so there was a lot of things adding up for me. I kind of felt like last year was just the offensive line was bad. They couldn't really run the ball. There were things like that was affecting CJ Stroud. So I thought we were going to see the sudden resurgence, and I was very high on the Texans early on. And then I just felt like the offense couldn't figure it out in that first half of the season. And because of that, I didn't see a solution that was going to be able to be simple enough. And also at that time, you go back and you look at the Colts, and they were 5-1, and it just felt like they were running away with everything. But that's how it feels like the NFL is this year. Honestly, it's a little kooky and crazy. And as soon as you think that someone can win a game, they lose, and, you know, vice versa. So I do think that the mindset on the Texans has changed a lot, and a lot of that is still based on the defense. It's clearly one of the best defenses in the NFL, and they're very scary to face. But I think what the Jags saw the last time they went against each other, which is against a backup quarterback in Davis Mills, that the offense is starting to become more functional now too, and things were starting to get settled in even at that time with the backup quarterback. So I think the mindset of Jags fans and the Jags media is still in the sense of just win and you're good. Worry about yourself at this point in time because the Jags are atop the AFC South. So just keep winning and that's all you have to worry about. But I'd be lying if I didn't say that people were starting to be like, oh, maybe we actually didn't want, you know, Houston to beat the Colts a couple weeks ago, and maybe we wouldn't have to be worried about Houston at this point in time. But now it does look like they're crawling back in, and it's a team that I think is getting hot at the right time.
Yeah, I think when you look at the way the schedules are going to play out for, you know, the Texans and a team like the Chargers and the Bills, I feel like we're destined, whether it's the Texans win the division or the Jags win the division for a 3-6 matchup between and getting that third game of the season between the Texans and the Jaguars, which would be fascinating because obviously Jacksonville wins the first one versus C.J. Stroud. They lose the next one versus Davis Mills. But the last 4 weeks, I mean, since that dramatic loss for Jacksonville and obviously the great win for the Texans, the Jags have gone out and beat the Chargers 35-6. They beat the Cardinals 27-24. They dominate the Titans, and they dominate the Colts, and mostly Riley Leonard in that game. But four strong victories. What does it say about this team? Like, have they turned a corner since that Texans loss, or is some of that more schedule-based?
So I think that there's a lot of talk about how that game kind of did light a fire under them. I think that they have made some changes. Jacoby Myers was one of the biggest moves that I think James Gladstone and company could have made because it really flipped the switch on an offense that was struggling beforehand. Trevor and Brian Thomas Jr. just really couldn't get that connection going, and you were kind of counting on guys like Parker Washington. I love Parker Washington. He's been really, really good for this team this year, but you were expecting a BTJ to be able to be that deep threat and kind of have that do what he did last year in his rookie season. And it just wasn't happening early on. And so Jacoby Myers comes to the city, and all of a sudden all the receivers are catching the passes. And that was an issue in the first half of the season. And everything, it feels like BTJ now can do what he does best, and that is just being that deep ball threat. And Jacoby's a Swiss Army knife and can do a little bit of everything. And then Brent Strange comes back, and he's healthy. So I feel like it's a combination of things. I feel like it's a combination of the players getting a little more comfortable in the system. I think adding a Myers really helped. I think some guys starting to get healthy in a Britton Strange really helped. I think that the offensive line started to gel a little bit better, even though they've still moved the left tackle around a little bit. It looks like Cole Van Landen maybe be the left tackle moving forward. He played this last game and really looked really good compared to Walker Little's struggles throughout the season. So I do think a lot of things kind of feel like they're just gelling at the right time, and Trevor Lawrence has looked the best he's looked to me in all this season and all of last season. I think that some of that is they simplified some stuff. So he got the wristband back on his wrist, and I think that some people may say that's not the biggest of deals, but I think that Liam Cohen's offense, from what we've heard, it's a lot of verbiage. It's a lot of things that you're having to remember. Multiple plays, they're sending three or four to Trevor in the huddle to kind of call out at one time. So we were seeing a lot of illegal shifts, a lot of false starts, a lot of just a lot of things that were setting this team back early in games and early in downs. And I think that affected a lot of things. And since he has the wristband on, I feel like things seem a little more controlled. They're letting him use his legs when he needs to. So the combination of all of that stuff and just the health of some of the players coming back, I think has been a big factor in them just hitting the stride at the right time.
We've been having this conversation, and Taylor Dahl of 1010XL in Jacksonville joins us here on Jeremy and Joe. There's been a lot of national media that has kind of labeled the Houston Texans as the team that nobody wants to play in the playoffs. We're having that conversation. We've been looking at the betting odds, but you know, we've discussed on our other show we do together for Locked On Bears, but like, you know, about how wild the AFC and the NFC are this year. So how do you view from an outsider perspective for the Texans to make a Super Bowl run, but also for Jacksonville to make a deep playoff run? How do you think that breaks down this year?
Yeah, it's funny because we were talking about this, and I think this year feels like one of the years where anybody could win, because for me, I would say the one team that I feel like dominates and has from pretty much start to finish on both sides of the ball has been the Rams. I mean, that's Matthew Stafford's having an absolutely insane year. The defense obviously is one of the better defenses in the NFL. It just seems like they're one of the few teams, in my opinion, from week one to now, have been the most consistent and on both sides of the ball. You've seen teams like the Texans defensively have been one of the better ones on that side of the ball for the majority of the season. Same with the Broncos, but their offenses have had moments of weaknesses. And then I think same with Seattle, the defensive side of the ball for them too. And so I think we have seen a lot of not complete teams yet, and now a lot of these teams are starting to get healthy or just hot at the right time, and it's really showing. But because of that, it's so unpredictable, because we saw this first half of football where a lot of teams just felt like I said, you're burying some teams, and now here they are going. And then you look at certain, you see, look at the AFC North, and you're like, what is even going on in the AFC North? So it's so hard to predict right now. So in my opinion, I think I put the Rams on their own tier right now, personally, and then there's a lot of teams on that next tier that I think that can truly be contenders. And I think that each of those teams are only a play or two away from having 2-3 more wins or having 2-3 more losses. And so that's why this season to me has just been kind of fun, because it's been a wild ride from start to finish, and we're not done yet. And there's still a lot of divisions that are going to come down in these final 4 weeks.
Do you feel like Philip Rivers is going to be playing quarterback for the Colts when the Jacksonville Jaguars play him in 3 weeks?
I really do, and it's kind of funny. We've been talking about it, obviously, here in Jacksonville quite a bit. The news broke, actually, during our show yesterday, and it kind of started as a joke because it was like, oh, they're working him out, and then next thing you know, it turned into, oh, they signed him to the practice squad. And, I mean, I guess it's a better option than what you had. You have a guy that is familiar in a system. From what I've heard, when he did come and work out, there was no worry about his arm. His arm strength was still there, and the accuracy seemed to be still there, as from what the reports say. Now you're going from two quarterbacks and a three, when you're talking about an Anthony Richardson, a Daniel Jones, and Riley Leonard, who are all quarterbacks that can really use their legs, and I'm not quite sure Philip Rivers is that quarterback, especially anymore. So it will be interesting, but I would not be shocked at all if that is who is starting coming up, and I think that it will be kind of fascinating to watch, because we've seen this. I mean, we're watching Aaron Rodgers this year, and they have the number 4 seed or whatever that is. You're seeing Matthew Stafford have one of his best years. Joe Flacco came in when they needed him, you know, got them some wins or a win or two. And so it's funny seeing this kind of resurgence of the old guys just trying to make a comeback.
Yeah, but I think Philip Rivers is the only one that's a grandfather. That's the difference.
Yeah,
I think he's the only one. It's absurd. Like, it's crazy that, like, Philip Rivers, like, his last, like, he can push, but he's pushing back potentially his Hall of Fame candidacy, which maybe that's intentional. Like, maybe he's trying to get away from, like, the Eli and Brady era of it, mm-hmm. and distance himself here. This will be a nice little box to check, I think, for the Hall of Fame committee one day. Is like, but he loves football. Like, look what he did at 44 years old. But the fact that Philip Rivers could play quarterback against the Jags and the Texans this year is one of the most bizarre stories in what has been a very strange NFL season, to say the least.
Yeah, and I feel like it's definitely a pretty rough stretch for him to come in, because I believe they play Seattle, too. So mm-hmm. when you're talking about a team coming in and you're talking about defenses, Seattle's defense is one of the best, one of the best in the NFL. Obviously, you guys have that, too. And then you're talking about the Niners and the Jags, who have pretty good defenses right now, also, even with injuries for the Niners. And so, I mean, it's not like he's coming in with an easy stretch. He has a pretty difficult little run of games where, I mean, if he could make something happen there, to your point, maybe that is some boxes checked off.
All right, she is Taylor Dahl. You can catch her on Helmets and Heels on 1010XL in Jacksonville every single day. And, maybe we'll be talking again before the playoffs start, Taylor, if we get that Texans-Jags matchup. Enjoy the rest of the season. Thanks for joining me, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
All right, of course. It's Jeremy and Joe here on ESPN 97.5. Going to be a fascinating stretch the rest of the season for all three of these teams. But I said it yesterday. Like, I feel like this is must-watch television in a way to see what Philip Rivers is actually going to do, if he's actually going to play. He was the first quarterback throwing the ball at practice today. Sometimes that is an indicator. So it was going Philip Rivers, Riley Leonard, who was a full participant in practice. So maybe this really isn't, maybe it's just a story to be a story, but we will wait and see. All right, when we get back, let's talk about the Astros. We hit on it a little bit earlier, but there's Isak Paredes rumors. There's Yordan going to be the DH. They're talking about Altuve at second place. What's the plan if the Astros don't make a trade? We'll get to that next year on ESPN 97.5. It is that time of the year, though, where a lot of us are thinking about getting ready to get in a brand new car. But the thing you don't want when you want to get into a new car is you don't want to be stuck with a 7-year loan. You don't want to be stuck with negative equity and all those different problems that you're going to be facing down the road. We're dealing with it right now. We're getting out of it, and we've already been on the phone with D&M Leasing because we are about to get into a brand new vehicle. D&M Leasing is home of the Easy Lease. They offer no payments until 2026, so only 21 days left to use that, but it's available to you right now, and they will walk you through the entire leasing process. So if you've never done it before, you can do it. And the average person, they want to get a new car every 3 years. But again, if you're stuck in these 7-year car payments, you can't do that. And with through a lease, you can. All you have to do is go to dmautoleasing.com today or call 713-290-1000 to get in touch with one of their leasing agents. They're going to give you great customer service. You're going to be able to do everything on your phone and at home, from a DocuSign to when it's time. They'll bring that car right to you. They'll take your trade-in on the way as well. Check them out right now at dmautoleasing.com or call 713-290-1000 and tell them ESPN 97.5 sent you by. Joe and AJ here with you for the final hour of the show today. Jeremy ditched me. We talked a lot about the Astros earlier. In the next segment, we'll talk about the Houston Texans, go over some of the best matchups for them in the playoffs. We'll probably bring in AJ at that part of the conversation, figure out who the Texans want to see in the first round of the playoffs, or in any round of the playoffs, frankly, at this point, which is a conversation I did not think that we would be having. Free agency is underway. We've seen a couple big moves so far. Kyle Schwarber went back to the Phillies. Pete Alonso today went to the Baltimore Orioles, a team that's made a couple moves. They traded for, Taylor Ward from the Angels. They brought in the Cardinals' former closer. So, they're making moves. So the Orioles will be, I think, an interesting team to keep an eye on. Obviously, that's a team that kind of fell well below the standards of what everyone was expecting in Major League Baseball last year. Finished last place in the American League East with 75 wins. So they're trying to change that. I don't know if Pete Alonso and these moves helped them fix a negative 111 run differential, which was second worst in the American League last year, but they're going to try. But we were talking about there's all these rumors and things being said about the Astros. Some are being said by the GM and the manager and Joe Espada and Dana Brown. And one of them is Jose Altuve is going to primarily play second base next year. There was also one by Joe Espada. They would like to see Yordan Alvarez be mostly a DH next season. And, you know, I guess he said likely to play second base a majority of the time next season about Jose Altuve is what Joe Espada said. But it just got me thinking, okay, let's say they decide just to run it back. And, you know, maybe Jake Meyers is traded, but this overabundance of infielders and DHs on their roster, how they manage it next year. I think the simplest thing here is that, for me, is that everything that's being said about Jose Altuve and the idea of him primarily being a second baseman next year, it's just not going to happen. If you're going to keep Isak Paredes on this team, you have to put Jose Altuve back in left field. I think, because it comes down to two things. It's, do you want Altuve out there or do you want Yordan out there? And I would much rather just see Jose Altuve in left field. They know they can put him out there because analytically, it's the easiest position to play, or it's the least impactful position to play of all the infield and outfield spots. You've got the Crawford boxes, which should help you out a little bit, I would think, for Jose Altuve. And again, he's, besides, when he got hit in the World Baseball Classic and some nagging injuries again this season that he got dealt with in the offseason, he's largely been healthy. And Yordan Alvarez, it's just the exact opposite. He's always hurt. And, we created the Yordan rules 2-3 years ago at this point on the station. And I don't see the advantage of having Yordan Alvarez as your primary everyday left fielder and making Jose Altuve your everyday DH and Paredes your second baseman. And maybe from a actual, skill point, that's the best option. But I think Altuve is just going to be the second baseman. And the advanced analytics on him are not positive there, and I think that's what the Astros were looking like, looking at last season of why they wanted to move him off of that. But as Jeremy pointed out earlier on the show, that the Astros are, in a way, kind of contradicting everything they talked about last offseason so far. The reason for the move with Altuve to left field was not about getting Dubon or someone else more playing time. It was about having your best defensive set on the infield. And Altuve, analytically, was not part of that, according to the Astros numbers. And it was about putting him in left field. And it was about bringing in guys like Isak Paredes, who were taking better at-bats. And now there's connections that the Astros might want to move him this offseason. So they're kind of spitting in the face of a lot of things they said last offseason. I'm not going to crush the Astros for changing. It felt like last year was an experiment. But I really think just putting Altuve back at second base is the simplest solution here. Yordan's your DH, and you bring in a new left fielder, or you run Jesus Sanchez out there. And I think it's your best lineup in terms of fielding. I think it's your best lineup in terms of hitting. I think it's your best lineup in terms of health at this point. I just don't see the need to try to put him out there. And the other thing you have to factor into this, and this is where, you know, maybe it will change things. Again, this is if they keep status quo, so that includes Christian Walker and Paredes on the roster, is if they do acquire a starting pitcher, what does that look like? Because they would mostly put, because what's interesting is how they would use Altuve is like, he'd obviously, for a ground ball pitcher, he'd be in the outfield. For a fly ball pitcher, he'd be on the infield. But replacing Fromber, if you replace Fromber with a guy who is the opposite of him, and that's a fly ball pitcher, like, does that change the dynamic with Altuve? And I think it kind of does. So if that's what you're, you know, I don't think you should make your decisions based on that, even though Jose Altuve is obviously not going anywhere. But if you were to acquire someone that's more, you know, likely to give up fly balls than grounders, then it's also easier to just continue to play it right there. Todd the Show says on Twitch, I think if you have Peña and Correa on the left side of the infield, Altuve hasn't hurting you that much at second base. And frankly, I agree with that, especially if Christian Walker is also your first baseman. Like, if that's the path the Astros end up having to choose, you have a Gold Glove first baseman, a Gold Glove third baseman, a Gold Glove shortstop. You got one weaker spot, but it's not the end of the world. And even with the advanced analytics, like, I don't think it's the end of the world to have Jose Altuve at second base. So this is going to be a fascinating offseason for the Astros to me, because you just got all these guys that you could easily move on from if you wanted to, but you also could just stick with all of it. I feel like the under-discussed part of all of this at this point is still the Isak Paredes injury, because if he's not healthy, who knows how easily you can actually move him this offseason. You know, it'd be brutal to see a trade go through. He ends up, let's say, back in Tampa for the example we used earlier, and they reject it because his hamstring looks like it's going to fall off the bone. That would be a disaster on so many levels for the Houston Astros. So we'll wait and see. It's winter meeting time. You know, now that some of the big names are starting to come off the board, it feels like things are going to start trickling out here and there. I don't expect the Astros to be in a move here soon, even though, you know, the way Dana Brown talked earlier was today at the winter meetings and yesterday is, you know, there have been a lot of phone calls, a lot of back and forth. I did find it interesting, on a quick side note before we go to break, that he did say, which I don't think this should shock any of us here, that teams, when they're talking to them, to the Astros, are focusing on the Major League roster. And I think that says two things. Is one, teams can see what's going on with the infield. They can see what's going on with Jake Myers. They know that he's available by all the reporting. That's where they're looking at. That's the first part. The second part is while I know a lot of people often get frustrated and don't understand why the Astros are always ranked poorly in the minor league system, and then these guys come up and perform, the truth is the Astros farm system is not that good. Like, if you're going to make a trade with a team, it's going to have to be, for the most part, from your major league roster, with your minor leaguers kind of being the sprinkles on top of the ice cream here. They're not going to be the main part of the story. 6517 says, Astros are like my broke uncle doing Christmas shopping. I mean, they spend quite a bit of money. They just don't spend like the Mets and the Dodgers do. And, well, maybe it's not the Mets anymore after those two of their best players. So maybe it's just the Dodgers, because the Yankees don't spend like that anymore. The Mets look like they may not spend like that anymore. There's been lots of rumors this offseason that the San Diego Padres are going to intentionally take a step backwards or make some big trades to lower their payroll, especially with the lockout, I think, definitely on its way. It's going to be fascinating to see how teams approach this offseason. And I think to make a wild guess at it is Jim Crane would prefer to save some money, knowing that there might not be fans at Daikin Park in 2027. But hopefully that doesn't happen, because ratings are up for baseball. Social media impressions are up for baseball. Just the vibes of baseball are better than they have been for me in a couple of years. Like, I just think collectively people are nationally back on a sport that they had kind of fallen off of. And a lockout would be an absolute disaster. Go watch the Montreal Expos documentary on Netflix if you want to see what that can do to a franchise and what it will do to a couple franchises that are currently active in Major League Baseball. All right, let's take a look at myself and AJ. We'll go through the best matchups for the Houston Texans in the AFC in the playoffs. We'll go through the likely ones that you could see in the first round, which is, at this point, all of them. We'll get into that next year on Jeremy and Joe on ESPN 97.5. Back here on ESPN 97.5, Joe and AJ hanging out with you until 6 o'clock, and then we'll hand it over to Destination 2026 with Glenn Davis tonight, followed by Comicast with Michael Carroll and Jong Lee, and then Hall of Fame with Booker T, who took a beating last night. Well, not really, but he got speared last night, it looked like, in on NXT, so hopefully Booker's okay, AJ. Might be down and count, down and out for the count. He shouldn't be doing that at his age. He's not Phillip Rivers out here, AJ. Nah. Can't just keep playing at this point. Big news of the day was Sherrone Moore has been fired by the University of Michigan for a cause, which one thing we didn't mention there, I think, is that can't be ignored, is this was wisely done after National Signing Day. They definitely knew this before, but they waited. It's maybe a scummy move, but it's a wise move, I would say. And the Houston Texans Week 17 game versus the Chargers has officially been slated for the Saturday game, 3:30 on NFL Network against the Los Angeles Chargers, which that's a game that I've talked a lot about this year that I thought AJ was going to be more of like win and make the playoffs, but now it's more about could you be the 6th seed, the 5th seed at this point. So I want to start here, and AJ, I'm going to let you go first here, okay? Who was the one team in the AFC you do not want to see the Houston Texans match up? Because they literally can play basically everyone with the way the seedings and everything are working. Who's the one team you don't want to see the Houston Texans play in the first round of the playoffs right now?
Honestly, if I'm them, I wouldn't be afraid of anyone. I think Jeremy said something yesterday about the Bills. I mean, we've seen recent history how Josh Allen plays against the Texans defense. So, I mean, if you're the Texans, in my opinion, you shouldn't fear anyone. Whether you have to go to Foxborough, I mean, it's going to be cold up there, of course. But, I mean, I know they play against the Chiefs in the cold weather, but still, that defense travels, so that's not going to necessarily, like, impact that much too much. I mean, really, the biggest thing is going to be how the offense performs. But if I'm the Texans, I mean, you should want smoke with anybody because I think you can beat anyone.
Yeah, I agree with you because after we were doing this yesterday, I was like, okay, there's got to be one team. Like, what's the worst matchup for the Houston Texans? And the team I locked in on here was the Houston Texans being the 7th seed with the playoff seeding standing, you know, as they are, and ending up having to play the Denver Broncos
right in
the first round of the playoffs. Look, you're at Mile High. Like, we know that that's a challenge. It's going to be freezing cold. Oh, and you're facing the second-best defense in the NFL. Now, yeah, I think they would have won that game here in Houston if C.J. Stroud would have played the entire game. But, like, in Denver against Sean Payton, against that defense, it would be my least favorite. I think I would still, at this point, I'm still picking them to win that game.
Yeah.
I'm still picking them to go into Denver and win that game because this defense is that damn good. And frankly, the Broncos' offensive struggles are kind of the same as the Houston Texans. They have quarterback play who sometimes it's really good, sometimes it's really bad. So I would go with the Texans and go with the playoff, you know, the multi-time playoff experience, even though Bo Nix got a game under his belt last year. But that to me is the one matchup where I'm like, I don't really want to see that in the first round. I think they're going to avoid the Bills. What the scenario for them to play the Bills at this point is the Texans win the division and they become the 3 seed and it's 3-6. Like, I don't think Buffalo's winning the East. Our thoughts obviously can change on that this weekend when the Bills and the Patriots play each other. But there's still another game that you have to gain on them. And the Bills' schedule is easy, but the Patriots are rolling. So if you can avoid Denver, like, that to me is like the optimal one. But Buffalo would be 2. Do you have a team now that you want to see? Like, is there like, this is the matchup that not just best suits the Texans in the first round, but also puts them on the best path forward for a Super Bowl?
Again, playing against the Chargers again. I mean, like I said, the Bills a second ago. But yeah, like the Chargers came in the playoffs last year. Like that one was, I mean, it was crazy dominant. It was kind of similar to how they dominated Josh Allen a few weeks ago against the Bills. So yeah, I mean, like some of those teams. But like, I mean, it's really wide open, honestly. So it doesn't matter. I get your point about the Broncos, though, for sure. Because I mean, the altitude factor and also Sean Payton, you know, being that experienced head coach, a Super Bowl winning coach as well, too. So that could be a chess match.
Yeah, you know, it's a team that's kind of hit CJ kind of hard, too. You know, like, it's,
right.
It's hard not to see the Denver Broncos games and the Houston Texans games and go, like, don't forget that coach got suspended for Bounty Gate at one point in time. Like, the way they're hitting CJ Stroud. Just feels like it just hit him a little bit harder than, like, the other teams in the NFL. Like, and like, that's Sean Payton's fault. Like it's that's not unfair to see them hit someone hard and be like, ah, that looks sketchy. Like, it's like if someone brings up the Astros, if they're playing really well, it's like, well, like, you kind of deserve it for what you did. Like, it's not a big deal anymore, but it's like, how do you argue against it? And that's kind of how I feel about Sean Payton. Yeah. Same thing with, like, Bill Belichick, or, like, if he starts winning at North Carolina, I'm like, watch, what kind of tape are they watching that they're not supposed to be watching because they're good all of a sudden? We're on the same page. Like, I would say Jacksonville yesterday, but I like Jacksonville. Like, I don't like Trevor Lawrence. But I like ETN. I think I like their defense. I like their coach.
Yeah.
I think the Texans, again, we would win that matchup. But the Chargers are so banged up. And, like, they got a good victory over the Eagles. Because even the Eagles are playing poorly. Like, it's still a good win. But they won by 3 points in overtime against Jalen Hurts, who threw 4 interceptions and fumbled his own fumble recovery at one point in this game, and they still only won by 3. Like, that to me, it, like, Justin Herbert, 12 for 26 for 139 yards in this game, sacked 7 times. He's hurt. He ran for 66 yards, which is incredible, but they're not the team they were earlier in the season. So I'm with you. I think the Chargers are, like, if I had, like, my ideal, like, it's the Texans get the 3 seed, they pass Jacksonville, and somehow the Chargers end up with the 6th seed, and that's who you end up playing again in the first round of the playoffs. And I was playing around quite a bit yesterday with the ESPN playoff predictor. It really does just come down to the Jacksonville Broncos game at this point, where if Jacksonville loses to the Broncos and the Texans win out, and both teams end up with 12 wins on the season, the Texans win the division. If Jacksonville were to pull the upset and beat Denver, there's nothing at that point for the Houston Texans. They are locked into a wild card for the first time in franchise history. My gut tells me the Texans are going to end up being the 6th seed this year, AJ, and playing Jacksonville. Do you feel the same way, or do you feel like it can shake out differently?
Yeah, I think it's shaping up to be that way for sure, and that's a favorable matchup, I would say, as well, too, especially, you know, like, when they lost in Jacksonville earlier in the year, you know, they're still trying to get the offense acclimated and things of that nature as well. But now the offense has more continuity, and with the offensive line, they're starting to play a little bit better in the defense. We all know what they're capable of. They can rattle Trevor Lawrence and stuff too. So that should be really one that you should try to look forward to, honestly.
Yeah, and honestly, if you're rooting for the 5 seed, which is, again, it's not out of play, you're rooting for the Patriots this weekend. That's the team you're rooting for, to put the Buffalo Bills at 5 losses on the season, a team that you would have the head-to-head tiebreaker for. I mean, the Texans really, if the Patriots win this weekend, they control their own destiny to match up with a first-round matchup of going to either Baltimore or either going to Pittsburgh. Now, that's the other one. Like, Baltimore hasn't really factored into this equation yet for people. And I know Lamar Jackson has not been good. He's at his worst version of himself this year. And they're a game, but they're only a game back of the division right now. But, like, there is a path to where the Patriots beat the Bills this weekend, the Texans keep winning, including a win over the Chargers on December 27th, and you're looking at a 5-4 seed first-round matchup, Houston Texans going to Baltimore, is the other one that I'm like, eh, I don't know if I want to see that either, AJ.
I think they could finally exercise those demons, though, and try to win, because they haven't looked great
at all.
It'd
be nice to.
Yeah, I think so. I think they would, because Lamar, he's been dealing with injuries the entire year. Their offense has just been very up and down, and, I mean, that's when I think that they could finally potentially get that one.
Yeah, Baltimore's fascinating, because it wasn't clear the last like, 2 weeks of, like, with Lamar. He's not been practicing, and he didn't practice again today. He's playing in the games. This isn't like previous years where like Lamar was dealing with like some sickness stuff and he would not practice and then play, or it actually would keep him out. I think he's really banged up right now. There's a reason why he's not out there at practice. So I guess it's a favorable matchup, I think, this year. And it would give you the opportunity to exercise some demons, but seeing the Houston Texans play Aaron Rodgers in the first round would be very interesting, I think,
for
as
sure.
Well. Because, I mean, last week was his best game. Like, they haven't looked great this year either. So the best matchup might be getting that 5C, because you potentially like can there is more of a path to finding your way into a home AFC Championship game this year, which sounds crazy, but I don't think you could. I think it's on the table. Like, the 5C could host it because of how chaotic the playoffs could get this year in the AFC. And, well, we'll worry about the NFC if you ever get there. I mean, it'd be great for having this conversation of, do you want to see the Rams or the Seahawks in the Super Bowl? That would be a lot of fun to have at some point this year, but I think it's on the table. All right, when we get back, we'll wrap up the show. We'll do our Junkie of the Day. That's coming up next year on Jeremy and Joe on ESPN 97.5. We will be headed back to La Berge for the first round of the college football playoffs. It's going to be an interesting schedule that Saturday. We're going to be on the air as soon as the Texas A&M postgame show ends. So we'll be doing a bullpen show on Saturday from, let's say, 4 to 6 before we hand it off to the James Madison and Oregon game, which will also air that night. And at La Berge, you can check out their brand new VIP fan cave sections that are available for bookings. But the big dates are starting to come off the board. Super Bowl is off the board, but hey, get in touch just in case there's a cancellation. But if you're thinking about going for March Madness, I would get in touch right now. We don't know times and things like that, but you can just, hey, lock up some days and go from there. They got brand new menu items already on the menu, new menu items all the way, and the restaurant area is now available to all ages. Right now, you can get on all the action. Your season-long bets for the NFL, there's still plenty of time to jump in on the live action, start to look ahead to the World Series. You still how you feel about the Rockets and the NBA Championship. The only place you can do it in Lake Charles. You can do 20-leg parlays, and you can also earn rewards on every wager you make when you use your Penn Play card at the Sportsbook at La Berge. They also, again, offer you a chance to place wagers on all of the Houston area teams. Must be 21 to bet. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. Joe George here on ESPN 97.5 for the final segment of Jeremy and Joe. Jeremy, do a full 3 hours tomorrow. Work a man's shift tomorrow. Calls me one show Joe and can't even do 3 hours. What a joke. So just me and AJ here with you for the final segment of the day. And it's time now, AJ, for our Junkie of the Day. I will go first, just in case you don't have one ready to go. I'm going to nominate two things today, okay? I'm going to nominate the University of Michigan, because, oh boy, Sherrone Moore fired today for not approved relations is probably the best way to put it, within someone that works at the University of Michigan. So he has been fired and now adds the ultimate wrinkle to college football as we now wait to see if someone like Kalen DeBoer could be an option, or if they promote internally, if they go to the NFL ranks to find someone. So first I'll nominate the University of Michigan, all involved in this process, for not being able to get away of a scandal. My second one is something I mentioned earlier, okay? I've heard it. I've got the tweets. I read the text line. I see the Twitch. I see the YouTube. I get it. I'm going to be the only person at this station that roots for Notre Dame, even though we all walk underneath play like a champion today sign as we walk into the host studio. No one's taking it down yet. I got to nominate Notre Dame. I'm exhausted by this. I'm not going to change my team, as some of the Twitchers have suggested. But my gosh, like, put your big boy pants on. Stop bitching. They just put out a tweet, AJ. That's kind of funny. Like, this one's actually funny. It said, instead of taking our ball and going home, it's taking our ball and going bowling. And they're going to do a charity bowling event for people in South Bend, Indiana. The football team is like, that's fine,
right,
whatever, but, like, please stop. Like, I don't want to hear it anymore. And they better go undefeated next season. That's all I'll say
yeah,
about that.
It's so time to move on.
All right,
from that.
AJ.
For me, it's the Colts bringing Phillip Rivers in. Hey, I could be wrong.
Awesome.
Like, if he starts this Sunday against the Seahawks, oh my gosh, good luck. Like, yeah, I saw how Max Brosman looked against them. I mean, Phillip Rivers, he's going to be a Hall of Fame quarterback at some point, but to be 44 years old, a literal grandpa, and going against that defense potentially, yeah, good luck with that.
It's the story is it's just absurd. Yeah. Like we'll never see anything like this ever. Like exactly. We'll never see someone that's been out of the league for 4 years, right? Four or five years. Yeah, he last played in 2020.
Yeah, COVID year. Like, yeah,
and come out of retirement. Like this never happens in sports. Like this length. I mean, what? How long? What, Michael was gone for?
I think one or two.
For when he before he went to the Wizards.
Oh yeah, I think something like that.
Like I don't think it was not a huge length of time.
Wasn't half a decade.
It was 3 years. It was 19. I mean, it was, but still, like that's the closest we probably have gotten. Where like he retires in 98, he comes back for in 2001. Numbers are good too if you look at him with Washington.
Yeah,
like this is the I guess the closest thing we'll see to that is the only really comparable sports moment like this. But it's just. It's awesome. Like, it's a great story. It's a funny story. I'm all in with this Phillip Rivers thing. I hope we get to see him play. I hope he's, you know, able to walk after he plays the Seattle Seahawks because they're going to destroy him. And he plays the Texans and the Jags. And, like, this schedule is tough. So good luck to Phillip Rivers. All right, that will do it for us. Coming up next, we'll have Destination 2026 with Glenn Davis. We'll have Comicast with Michael Carroll coming up there at 7. And the Booker T and the boat, the best of all time, Brad Gilmore, coming up. The Hall of Fame coming up at 8 o'clock. That will do it for us today. We'll be back with you guys tomorrow here from 3 to 6, Jeremy and Joe on ESPN 97.5.